British Sky Broadcasting presents The Good German, starring George Clooney, Kate Blanchett and Tobey Maguire. Voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. Grainy period footage of what appears to be Berlin ravaged by the World War II air raids and siege. People struggle to survive in the wreckage, cooking on makeshift burners or pulling small handcarts of possessions through the streets. Strained, dejected faces stare out. A line of pedestrians and horse-drawn carts files along a wide boulevard. Soldiers march across a square. Women wield pickaxes as they mend the cobbles. A caption reads, based on the novel by Joseph Cannon. A man holds up a handwritten sign reading, Kelly, 4th CCU Berlin, roll number 15. Military trucks rumble past. Soldiers stand around smoking. One plays the accordion. A huge public square stands empty. Planes stand on the concrete apron of a military airstrip. A caption reads, Berlin, July 1945. Harry Truman, Winston Churchill and Joseph Stalin are scheduled to meet outside the city in Potsdam to draw up the post-war map. Only Japan continues to fight. A heavily built man with a moustache comes down the steps from a propeller plane and crosses to a man in uniform.
Congressman.
General.
A younger man in smart US military uniform emerges from the plane and descends the steps. He starts to walk across the airstrip, looking about him shrewdly, almost as if somewhat amused. A slim junior officer in forage cap standing by a jeep parked across the apron holds up a sign and smilingly addresses the officer.
Herzlich willkommen! In Berlin.
The chalked sign he holds up reads Geismar. The pair drive in the jeep.
Who is that guy?
Reimer. He's a congressman.
You're here for the peace conference?
I'm here to write about it. You ever hear of the New Republic?
No.
The uniform's the Army's idea of a joke.
You see any action?
I was in London when Franz Bethmann aimed one of his Roman candles about 100 feet away from me. Broke all my martini glasses.
Who is Franz Bethmann?
Bethmann, von Braun, the Krupp Rain Trust, the guys who built the V-2s. I actually wrote a column about him.
I wish I could write. I have some great stories I could tell.
No sense. It's not only the Germans anymore. The Russians are the enemy now. The godless people. Get down the rail yard, see for yourself. Nothing's not nailed down. They're taking it, send it back to Moscow.
Well, why not? They took most of the bullets.
We've been teaching the Ivans how to play stickball. Some of those fellas can really hit.
I bet you can't wait to go home, huh, soldier?
Oh, yes, sir. You know the Germans. They make excellent Danish, but they can't bake apple pie like my mom.
Nothing wrong with the Germans. But they good German folks back in Schenectady.
Having mounted a sweeping staircase in the company of Congressman Breimer, the heavy-set man who was first off the plane, the young driver and Geismar enter an elegant apartment. The young soldier pulls dust covers off the antique furniture. Geismar puts his bag down on the bed and goes to unpack, but the young soldier intervenes.
Oh, excuse me. Let me help you with that, sir.
I got it, Tully.
Being helpful is all.
You know who's driving me tomorrow?
Got my trip ticket today. I'm your driver for the duration of your stay here in Berlin. And got you a little housewarming present.
Thanks, Tully.
See you in the morning. Say 0800?
0800.
Tully smiles, leaving Geismar the scotch but having stolen his wallet.
I wouldn't myself have sized him up that way, you know? Just meeting the guy. You wouldn't think of him as a patsy. That's what I loved about Berlin. Even a guy who wasn't a patsy back home turned into one. It was inevitable. The whole city spread its legs for you. All that eat, drink, and be merry bullshit seized the day. Sure didn't make anyone smarter. And the best part of it was no one got hurt. There was too much money floating around for anybody to fall down without a nice soft cushion. Occupation marks printed just for us. Funny money. Didn't feel like losing it when they lost it. The Russians, they had to spend it before they went home, which was all anyone talked about, going home. Everyone, even the Russians. God, who would ever want to? You can say what you want about the war. Certainly, I would never wish for all those millions of people to die, but the war was the best thing that ever happened to me. Because when you have money, then, for the first time in your life, you understand it. What money does for you. Where before, all you understood was not having it. Money allows you to be who you truly are.
A beautiful woman, possibly the same one Tully has just been having vigorous but one-sided sex with, enters.
So you like your job?
What?
Your job.
Sure.
Yeah?
What are you doing with that cigarette?
Waste not, want not. It is a job, right? How do you like your job?
How do you like working in the motor pool?
What the hell does that mean?
Nothing.
Well, that doesn't even follow.
Perhaps my English.
Like you should be fucking Dwight Eisenhower, Countess Roundheels?
I was just making conversation.
No, you weren't. That's what I was doing. Don't tell me how to run my business. 2,000 yards of parachute silk in the Russian zone. I can get in and out anywhere. The British zone, the French zone, and I got the vehicle. The motor pool's the best job in the fucking army.
I'm sorry.
The young man stares dangerously at the woman who gazes back with an air of fatalism. He finally turns away and goes back to the cigarette he has been rolling or repairing. She turns away as if she cannot bear to watch him. He lights and draws on the cigarette. He continues rolling a small stack of cigarettes. She now stands by the window, smoking.
I thought you were going to help me get out of Germany. It's going to get harder, not easier. Watch. Put your name on a list and then that's it.
She looks across at him as he leans forward to lick a cigarette paper. She gives a laconic half-smile.
I forget sometimes what a boy you are. Such a boy. Sweet little boy.
Now cut it out.
Does it bother you? Or should it? My husband was a boy, too. A little boy who saw numbers in his head.
He turns and then gets up, joining her by the window and putting his arm around her waist.
I'm your fellow, okay? I'll get you out of here. You watch.
In daylight now, Tully drives his Jeep.
My Jill, she's not just a pretty face, no sir. She won first prize last year in the 4-H with her rhubarb pie and second with her gourds.
That's terrific, Tully.
Oh, she's pretty terrific, sir. Any luck, I'll be home in the fall for the harvest dance.
Well, at this rate, we'll still be driving to Potsdam.
Somebody got up on the wrong side of the bed.
Some son of a bitch stole my wallet.
No kidding.
Must have been in that crowd at the airport.
Well, I can loan you some money if you need it.
Thanks, Tully.
Don't want you to miss out on all the great things Berlin has to offer while you're here.
I used to live here before the war.
Really?
Ran the AP Bureau.
They're not really going to put the whole country on trial, are they?
Do you think they shouldn't?
Doesn't seem like the American way just to lock a person up for something they didn't have anything to do with.
Somebody you know, Tully?
I'm just saying.
Well, there's a piece it would sell. Fallen Women of the Third Reich.
That's pretty raw, sir.
Millions of people didn't just disappear because the elves came out at night. Your Fräulein knew exactly what Hitler was doing. They all knew. Did she lift a finger?
You don't know a thing about her.
You do?
Just because you're a German doesn't make you a Nazi.
Geismar smiles wryly and looks in the wing mirror, spotting a black car.
You heard Reimer. It's on to the Russians. The next war. You'll leave your girlfriend alone unless there's some special reason not to.
It's gonna cost me a pretty penny to get her out of Germany. I'll tell you that right now.
I wish I could help you out, kid.
You want an hour with her?
Geismar casts Tully a disdainful look and tosses his cigarette out through the open side of the vehicle. Tully glances across noncommittally. The jeep speeds onwards through the ruins of the city. A comfortable ivy-clad building. A caption reads, Potsdam. The jeep passes beneath a weathered brick archway into a courtyard full of vehicles and men standing around as if waiting to go inside the building. Tully leans against brickwork, smoking. He observes a bus pulling into a stop and people getting off. One of these is a severely disabled man crouching on a small wheeled trolley which he pulls along using two handheld weights. Tully looks down as the man approaches the alleyway in which he is lounging.
Beautiful day, huh?
Are you looking for an argument?
The man struggles past Tully, who raises his eyes.
I'm sorry I broke your tooth. It was an honest disagreement.
What do you need?
Papers to get someone out of Germany.
A Nazi?
Not a Nazi, a friend of mine.
But what I've been so you'd ask me to help a Nazi escape Germany?
Hey, cry me a river. Fuck. Everyone in this town's got a hard luck story. You gonna help me or not?
I'll see what I can do.
Great. Just don't chew me on the price.
The man shakes his head and continues effortfully towards the front door of what looks like an abandoned shop. Tully pulls up in his jeep outside a once elegant, now dilapidated building. A car is parked across the way, almost as if someone was sitting inside it observing Tully as he gets out and enters the building. Tully climbs the broad staircase in the now dingy hallway. On a landing, he discovers the door to a flat standing open. Seemingly alarmed, he pulls his pistol out and pushes the door wider.
Lena?
A bull-necked soldier pulls the door open, disarms Tully, throws him to the floor and kicks him viciously in the groin. The soldier now forces Tully's face into the water of a toilet bowl.
Where's Emil Brand?
Who?
Emil Brand.
Who the fuck is Emil Brand?
Where's Emil Brand?
Fuck you!
The soldier wrenches Tully's arm and leaves.
Fuck!
Tully's jeep speeds around a corner and pulls up at the curb. Tully gets out and descends steps into a beer cellar. Holding his damaged right arm stiffly, he walks through the deserted saloon and up to the bar where Lena sits talking to the barman. He pulls Lena away and down a corridor.
Who's Emil Brand?
Emil?
Who is he? They were looking for him in your place. Your place, Lena. Where is he?
He's dead.
Oh! Don't lie to me!
He died. He died in the war.
Like you fucking know? Who is he?
He was my husband.
Lena?
Lena gives a brief shake of her head towards the barman who stands looking concerned for her.
Emil Brand. That's your husband?
Yes. I'm Lena Brandt.
A last name. What a cozy feeling.
Tully.
He must have done something if they're all hopped up to find him. I'm gonna find out sooner or later.
He was a mathematician.
He saw numbers in his head? It's bullshit! They broke my fucking arm, Lena!
He was a nobody. Somebody's secretary.
Whose secretary?
What does it matter who? My husband brought him his coffee and took Steno.
When's the last time you saw him?
Three years ago. I'm with you now, Tully.
How am I supposed to help you, Lena, if you won't help me?
I would never hurt you, Talia. Never.
You can get anything on the black market. I already talked to someone, a little lopcock, no legs, but he can run down anything. He can get you on a train out. That's what you want, right?
They told me he was dead. One more dead, or not dead. Who would know?
Poor fucking stupid Lena. You don't know fucking nothing, do you? Oh.
Tully slides to the floor next to her. She strokes his cheek. Nighttime, Tully's jeep is flagged down at a roadblock. Tully hands over a wallet in which is Geismar's photo ID and a wad of cash, which the checkpoint guard ruffles with his thumb. Tully's jeep now swings into a courtyard. A shaven-headed Russian officer seems to be standing waiting for him.
Hey, Sikorsky.
What happened to your arm?
Scotch from Scotland. 40 cases.
Good.
They flew it in for Churchill.
Can't afford it.
Hey, who's your comrade? Don't worry, I'll give you a price.
In Sikorsky's office, Tully pours two generous measures of scotch and slides one across the desk.
I got something else for you.
Really? What's that?
Emil Brandt.
Remind me who that is?
You should know, you've been looking for him.
Have I? Names and names. So many names. Ugh.
Maybe I should just turn them over to the Americans.
Why don't you?
Because when everyone else pulls up their tents, then you Ivans will be the only game in Berlin, and the fact is, I like it here.
That's it? A favor?
$200,000 marks. It's not like I'm asking for real money. I have the printing press work overtime a couple hours. Plus paper so I can get my girlfriend on a train out of here.
The trouble is, Tully, I have seen Emil Brandt's death certificate with my own eyes.
I thought you weren't looking for him.
Sikorsky eyes Tully and gets up and crosses to him. He pushes Tully's feet off his desk.
Now let me do you a favor. You remind me of my son. A little bit of a buffoon, but good-natured. Get out now, before you get hurt.
Sikorsky returns to his side of the desk. Tully draws on his cigarette as he takes in this advice, then smiles.
Suit yourself. I just gotta figure out how to get my girlfriend on that train.
What's your girlfriend's name?
Mrs. Emil Brandt. Imagine her surprise when he turned up like that. And mine too.
Tully leaves. Sikorsky seems to be having trouble swallowing his scotch.
Hey, Tully.
Sikorsky, all smiles and glass in hand, catches up with Tully.
I'll take your offer. 200,000 marks.
A lot to arrange, getting him out of the American zone. You follow?
Come back in 2 hours. I'll advance you half. And bring Mrs. Brandt.
Sikorsky shrewdly watches Tully go. Tully's jeep moves slowly down a jumbled side alley in the darkness. Tully gets out and goes down steps into a building.
I'm not going with you to the Russian zone.
Lena, half up front, 100,000 marks. Have you checked the exchange rate lately?
What happens when they find out you don't have Emil?
What happens is we're in London with 10,000 fucking dollars. You're out, I'm out. It's a perfect plan.
I won't go to the Russians, though. I won't.
He just wants to see you. What's the big deal? He just wants to know I really have him.
But you don't have him.
You're out there selling love you don't have.
Geismar appears next to Tully.
Hey, Fish. I had to hitch a ride home from a conference. What happened?
Well,
I hate to pull rank on you, but you are my fucking driver.
I'm off the clock, sir.
Geismar turns to look at Lena. She stands looking away as if trying to be inconspicuous. He stares, incredulous.
Lena?
Tully looks from Lena to Geismar and back. She finally turns to Geismar.
I'm off the clock, too.
I'll pick you up in the morning, okay? If you don't mind, I'm in the middle of something.
Lena, we know each other.
I said I'm in the middle of something.
What the hell happened to you?
I just need a minute to think, Tully, okay?
You can think on the way.
Hey, don't push her around like
that. Fuck you!
Move! Tully knees Geismar in the groin as he tries to intervene and then forces Lena out through the exit of the bar and into his waiting jeep.
Get in!
Shut up!
Stupid fuck!
Having beaten Geismar viciously with a heavy bar from inside the jeep, Tully jumps in and reverses away, leaving the older officer writhing in pain on the cobbles.
They gave me a choice, London or Berlin. For me, there was no choice. The minute it came over the wire that the war in Europe was finally over, all I thought of was Lena. I didn't expect to run into her. Not that way. Not my first week in town. But that was just like Lena. She always kept me off balance. Tully wouldn't be a problem, or not anything I couldn't figure out. I just had to find her again. I knew the bartender would help. You tell a bartender you're looking for a friend, and suddenly you have two friends. Him, and the girl he steers you to. What the hell's she doing with him?
Who?
Lena.
Tully. He's not a bad sort, just a bit of a cunt.
Yesterday he tried to pimper to me.
Well, she and her friend Hannelore come around and cheer up the GIs. We're all just trying to get by, is all.
This whole goddamn country, she winds up fucking my fucking driver.
Oh, you knew her?
I hired her as a stringer. Her husband was never home, no kids. She got tired of rattling around the house all day. She was good at it, too. She could get people to do things for her, and they didn't know how she did it.
So you were screwing your secretary?
Stringer.
Sorry.
Doesn't mean that she's with him, anyway.
Well, she seems to have made quite an impression on you.
Yeah. I just didn't expect I'd find her like this. I didn't expect I'd find her.
When you say to yourself, that's the worst thing I've ever heard, stick around. That's Berlin. Now it is. There's always something worse.
The barman tops up Geismar's glass and pours himself a shot at the same time. The two men, tucked away at one end of the long, deserted bar, meditatively sip their drinks. A young woman in uniform alternately directs traffic with a pair of flags and salutes the official cars as they speed past into the Potsdam conference enclosure. Uniformed men troop inside to where a mass of delegates crowd the hallway.
Geismar. G-E-I-S-M-E-R.
Yes, I understand. Look, I'm sorry, but the New Republic is not credentialed for today's schedule. We cannot have you running around without a press
card. I told you my wallet was stolen.
I have a line of people behind you. Now, maybe you should speak to General Sikorsky. He's the officer in charge of security.
Geismar casts a look across to where Sikorsky stands watching, stony-faced.
Where's Charlie Ross? I played poker with him at St. Louis. I could just talk to Charlie Ross. Ah, fucking duck.
Geismar, having pushed his way back out through the mass of people, now walks among trees, smoking. He catches sight of a small group of soldiers hurrying down to a riverbank. Curious, he heads towards the men as they wade into the river. As Geismar comes close, he sees that the soldiers are pulling from the river the dead body of a man. They pull the body onto the bank. One soldier yanks at the corpse's money belt, sending a shower of notes into the air. Geismar bends down and turns the corpse onto its back. It is Tully. Geismar shakes his head.
Стоять, не с места! Перчи, фашинцы, подцепить берег! Валентинович, Рамазанов, соберите деньги!
Sikorsky himself has arrived at a run with a group of reinforcements. He stops, looking down at Tully as if with some sadness. He and Geismar exchange a look.
General!
The soldier who attacked Tully in Lena's flat approaches.
General, I'm with the Office of the Military Governor. I'll be escorting the captain back to the American zone.
Geismar walks away with the young soldier. Sikorsky remains standing over Tully's corpse. A black car drives along a lane among trees. Geismar looks towards his driver as if about to speak, but then seemingly thinks better of it. The car pulls up outside an elegant white stuccoed house. Geismar gets out and walks towards the entrance. An officer watches him through a window. The officer now sits across a desk from Geismar, looking through a sheaf of papers.
Were you with Corporal Tully last night?
I was in a club up till dawn, drinking with a bartender, if your girl Friday had bothered to check.
Checkpoint recorded Jacob Geismar crossing into the Russian zone just after midnight.
Fucking Tully.
What's that?
My wallet was stolen at the airport.
Did you report it?
It's not exactly a war crime.
Where'd you get those bruises on your face?
Got in a fight with Tully.
Over?
He rode the brake.
Wasn't over a girl, was it?
He was supposed to pick me up at a conference. He didn't show. I got pissy about it.
The Russians want us to go away. An American serviceman turns up dead in Potsdam on the eve of the peace conference? That's pretty damn embarrassing. Good news for you, frankly. We want it to go away, too.
Well, maybe I should talk directly to the MG.
He won't want to bother with us.
He doesn't want to know what Tully was doing in Potsdam?
Oh, we're doing a hell of a job in Berlin. Is there a black market? Sure there is. Are some of our boys involved in it? Yes, they are.
If the Russians killed Tully...
Then he deserved whatever he got. And his poor family doesn't need to know anything more than that he crashed his Jeep trying to avoid a bunny rabbit. We're not going to start World War III over some dumb GI who got his dick stuck in a pitch pot. And I suggest that you stay out of the Russian sector for the rest of your time here. And we can't protect you over there.
Geismar raises his eyebrows as if seeking confirmation that that is all.
Thanks.
And if you find that girl, we'd like to talk to her.
The officer smiles winningly at Geismar, who half nods as he leaves. Left on his own, the officer looks more somber. Geismar stands smoking, looking at a knot of children sailing a boat on a river. The bull-necked soldier walks up behind him.
Kids. 2 months ago, they were shooting at us.
Geismar turns to follow the soldier back towards the car, tossing away his cigarette end as he does so. Geismar, back in Berlin, crosses the street towards the steps and grand colonnade of the building housing the US administration. He sits waiting next to a shaven-headed man with holes in his shoes.
Jake Geismar. Who'd you insult this time?
You got a second? I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, why don't we get a drink and catch up? How's 1946?
You mean you're not interested?
I mean, I know you're Jake, and we're a long way from South Street.
It's funny. I haven't met a DA yet that can resist a murder.
Followed by the shaven-headed man, they pass a laborer chiseling off a swastika from the wall.
Nothing better for a prosecutor than a criminal with a sense of history. Everything got written down. Who they killed and what it cost. Meticulous record keepers.
Forces from the West are poised to strike the final blows upon Japan. This military power is sustained and inspired by the determination of all the Allied nations to prosecute the war against Japan until she ceases to exist.
It looks like you're putting the whole country on trial.
Well, these are just the active cases. The rest are kept under lock and key at Kranzberg. They want me to decide who the ardent Nazis were. Truth is, it was the whole country. Nobody's hands are clean. 20-hour days just to get my arms around it. So, what's the murder you wanted to tell me about?
Geismar throws a look at the shaven-headed man.
What, Gunther? He used to be a cop here in Berlin. Don't worry, he doesn't speak a word of English.
My driver, a kid named Tully, turned up dead in Potsdam.
Potsdam? Potsdam's closed for the conference.
Whoever wanted him dead had access to the delegations. That means somebody pretty high up.
Yeah, why haven't I heard about it?
Because Colonel Muller didn't want you to. He pulled me in and ordered me to leave it alone.
Nobody around here is acting like the war's over. Not the Russians. Not the MG. What's your angle?
Why do I have to have an angle?
You know, it just doesn't sound like you, Jake. When you came home from Berlin, all you talked about was what a great lay your secretary was.
Stringer.
Stringer, sorry.
A bullet through the chest, face down in the river, and it's like it never even happened. Isn't that what we fought a war about? Even a louse like Tully?
Okay. Okay. What?
The Russians will have to do a police report. Can you get me a copy?
This guy? Drove one of the gas vans. They'd load the Jews in back, run the exhaust inside. By the time they got where they were going, they were already dead. Very efficient. Driving to work, he killed more people than Al Capone in all his years in Chicago. But if you asked him, he isn't a murderer. He's a truck driver. And he still thinks that.
Thanks, Bernie. I owe you one.
Geismar leaves. The uniformed American lawyer and Gunther exchange a look of complete mutual misunderstanding. On the stage of a smoky bar, the band plays to accompany the rather weary but proficient striptease being performed by a young blonde woman. Geismar sits drinking and smoking at one end of the bar, with half an eye on the show. The Scottish barman places a chunk of bread alongside a chunk of cheese and wraps them in a cloth as the stripper, now dressed for home, approaches.
Thank you, Danny.
Zinzi, Anna Laura?
She turns to where Geismar stands, doing up his jacket.
I can't be out after curfew. Would you walk with me?
In the darkened street, Geismar waits as the stripper climbs the stairs to a front door. Unlocking it, she turns towards him. She opens the door to a rundown flat and lets him in after her.
You live here with someone?
Big man? You want two girls?
You know a girl named Lena?
Who told you about Lena?
I'm not trying to get something for nothing.
Aren't you going to offer me a cigarette?
I didn't see her at the club.
Skinny Lena. A big yank in the saddle, you'd break her in two.
Can I look in your bedroom?
Hmm.
She begins to undress. Good, an old-fashioned one. Fuck in the bed, easy on the knees. She lies down seductively on the bed as Geismar inspects the room.
Come, fuck me, Dutch.
She seems unimpressed by his lack of interest in her.
The princess, who knows where she is? Lena was raped by the Russians. You'll get yourself a good dose.
I apologize if I hurt your feelings.
She accepts the hip flask he tosses to her.
She's not so special. They raped everyone, cripples, children.
As the woman drains the hip flask, Geismar hears the door open and turns to see Lena walk slowly in. She turns her sad eyes towards him.
How did you find this place?
$500 just to talk. That's what I call a real pervert.
A couple hours off, would you?
Lena moves through into the kitchen. She removes her coat as the other woman gets back into her dress and follows Geismar into the kitchen. Lena picks up the coffee pot. The other woman sidles up to Geismar so that he can do up the zip of her dress. She casts him a supercilious look as she picks up her things and leaves. Lena places the pot on the stove and then pauses, looking at Geismar.
I have nothing to be ashamed of.
I didn't say you did.
The war. It's convenient. We can all blame everything on the war. Isn't that why you left? The war?
I found that blue dress I bought you.
All the old things. All the old times. This is my life now. Tully at least understood that.
What was Tully doing in Potsdam last night?
I don't know.
You weren't with him?
Potsdam is in the Russian zone. I don't go to the Russian zone.
Lena, if I can find you, so can they.
As if I'm the only one who needed help. Look at you.
What is it you're not telling me?
It couldn't be that I loved him.
You don't need to be afraid of him anymore. You don't need to protect him anymore.
I think if you hadn't left, Jacob, nothing would be any different. Nothing. If you want to stay, it's 500 marks. Make up your mind. I'm going to sleep.
She walks out, leaving Geismar standing alone and pensive in the kitchen. He picks up his army cap from the table by the front door. He looks once over his shoulder as he lets himself out of the flat. Daylight. Geismar leans against an advertising hoarding in the street. He ditches his cigarette butt and walks off purposefully. Bernie, the American military lawyer, sitting in a car with Gunther, winds down his window as Geismar draws parallel.
Did you get the police report?
I had to get it from a friend of mine on the Russian side. Even Mueller hasn't seen that yet.
Interesting reading.
Well, for starters, they found 50,000 marks on him.
So figuring they stole half, 100?
They found a slug lodged in his backpack, 32 caliber. Our guns are 45.
Thanks.
At the Potsdam conference, a drab beige vehicle pulls in. Inside the building, Congressman Breimer briefs a journalist.
No, listen, I'm the first to recognize there were excesses in the Nazi leadership. But if we besmirch an entire people because of a few bad apples, we're no better than Hitler. Then it's not about war crimes at all. It's about revenge.
Brimer clocks Sikorsky being called away by one of his soldiers.
Revenge. Right. Got it.
Exactly. Revenge.
Geismar walks among the trees by the riverbank. He pauses at the spot where Tully's body was dragged ashore. Spotting something, he kneels. The corner of a piece of paper lies among the leaf mold. Geismar pulls it out and examines the $100 bill. Geismar swings round.
Amerikansky journalist!
As Geismar tries to hang on to the money, the Russian guard knocks him out with his rifle butt, sending him rolling to the water's edge. Sikorsky arrives. Geismar sits in Sikorsky's office, having his face stitched. He tosses the money onto the table.
I found that in the dirt where Tully's body washed up. The little dash that you'll sometimes find near the serial number, it's not there.
That's meaningful?
It means that Tully had something to sell, something that our side very badly wanted and you very badly didn't want us to have. So you solved it the only way you Russians know how to. You put a bullet in him, in Potsdam, where he thought he'd be safe.
All that from a mark of punctuation.
No dash means that it's American. You could check it against the money you stole from him, if you felt like it.
Sikorsky opens his desk drawer.
Спасибо.
Having thanked the medical orderly, Geismar turns to watch Sikorsky as he thumbs through a wad of banknotes. Seeming to discover the truth of what Geismar said, he stashes the money away, nervously loosening his collar and cuffs.
I was expecting Tully that night. Here, not in Potsdam. He never showed up. Instead of the usual scotch and cameras he was selling for the price of 200,000 marks, a man named Emil Brandt.
What's so interesting about Emil Brandt?
The Americans were looking for him. That made me curious. We pack up entire factories and ship them back to Moscow. Now the peace conference, Poland, Romania, half of Europe, a windfall. Something for the sacrifice and suffering. Now ask yourself, what do the Americans get?
Sounds to me like we're getting a good fleecing.
You may not be as safe on the American side as you think.
Geismar throws Sikorsky a dour look. Nighttime, Geismar ambles along a street, approaching what appears to be the front of Lena's building. In a semi-lit corridor, he knocks on a door.
Hello, Lena.
He pulls out a pocket knife and forces the door. He walks cautiously into the darkened flat. From out of the shadows, a man rushes him, breaking a chair on his back. They grapple. Geismar pulls off one of the man's shoes. The man gets Geismar in a lock and seems to bite his ear. Kicking Geismar with his one remaining shoe, the man turns and leaves. Geismar, his hand covered in his own blood, turns to see the shoe sitting in the doorway. Geismar turns on the light. He holds a wad of cloth to his ear. He inspects the flat, which has been turned over. Kneeling, he looks down at a framed photo on the floor of an SS officer. The glass has been smashed. Strewn around the picture are several notebooks with the name Dora inscribed on the front. Geismar picks up and begins to rifle through one of the notebooks. It seems to be full of tightly packed and closely reasoned calculus. Up a narrow staircase, the Scottish barman carries his bike. He leads Lena and her flatmate Hannah-Laura into a tidy but sparse room. Geismar follows them in.
Even radar couldn't find you here. Of course, you won't be earning, but Jacob here volunteered to carry you girls in the cuff till things have settled down. I'll check in on you when I can.
As long as it's on the cuff and not on my back. It gives me the creeps.
Fixing your mouth with where it's going, sweetheart. Let's give them a minute.
Lena and Geismar have gone into a very shabby bedroom. She goes to the window and opens it.
I don't want you to go out anymore.
It's a good thing I wasn't there, don't you think? I went for a loaf of bread.
I could bring you anything you need.
Stare at the same four walls. I'd go mad.
You want to tell me why Emil would be worth 100,000 marks to someone?
Off the framed photo.
There'd be no reason.
That's how much money they found in Tully's body.
That doesn't make any sense.
Might have been nice to know, Mrs. Brandt, that Tully was auctioning off your husband.
We never talked about Emil, remember? One of our rules. Affair has more rules than marriage.
The Americans are looking for him and the Russians. Why?
I don't know.
Where is he? Lena, where's Emil?
Emil's dead. He died 6 months ago in the bombing. Tully found out the Americans were looking for Emil, so he offered him to the Russians. One of his schemes. Stupid. A way to get money to get me out of Germany. Sell him a dead man. Now he's dead too. Maybe you next if you don't watch yourself.
This isn't gonna go away just because Tully's dead.
That's all I know.
Emil was with the SS?
2 years ago, they all got uniforms. Who knows why?
Stop lying to me!
I'm a Nazi myself. Did you know that? It's true. Heil Hitler!
You're not a Nazi!
No, not a Nazi. None of us. Just something to join, like a sport club. How could you fuck someone for all those years and not know them?
Stop it.
Did you ever fuck a Nazi?
Cut it out.
How about a Jew?
Why won't you let me help you?
A Nazi and a Jew both. Better yet.
You did nothing wrong.
I survived.
As if exhausted by her tirade, Lena sits down on the bed. Geismar draws closer and reaches out to touch her shoulder. She brushes him away. She seems to be having a flashback. She runs through a semi-lit building. Coming up against a locked metal grill, she calls out. A tall figure comes up behind her and seems to grab her. Back in the present, she winces and turns away. She crosses to the window.
What happened to the rest of your family?
They got sent to the camps. Everyone. My mother, uncles, cousins. Everyone dead. As the wife of an SS man, I was exempt. A Jewess is not a Jew, that's the way they used to put it. It's not something I have ever told anyone. And at the end, no one was exempt.
Hannah-Laura told me that you were raped by a Russian.
Hannah-Laura can't tell a joke.
I didn't realize it was funny.
Hannah-Laura's funny. She always leaves something out.
Why? What did she leave out?
Lena lies on a bed. A Russian officer is on top of her. As the man violently rapes her, she reaches down to his side, pulls the pistol from his holster and shoots him through the head. Blood spatters onto the wall as the man falls away, leaving her sobbing.
And then I met Tali.
The screen goes black. Grainy footage of Berlin. Two people cycle across a ruined square. Geismar sits at a table in the small flat, looking at a small photo of a young girl.
Oh, God in heaven, I never thought I'd eat real ham again. Don't you want to have any?
None for me.
No? Is it a Jewish name, Jacob?
The way you're eating that ham could turn anyone kosher.
It's easy now to say Hitler was wrong about the Jews. Let me tell you something. Nobody said he was wrong at the time.
Lena enters, giving Hannah-Laura a sharp look.
You're up early.
I went down to the PX first thing and stocked up. You want some coffee?
Real coffee.
No wonder you won the war eating like this.
Little girl in the photograph, is that Dora? The notebook said Dora.
What do you think you'll find in here? It's all I have left of him.
Dramatic, the princess. Don't believe her. She didn't give two shits for him, alive or dead. Dragging around that shrine of crap and papers. Meanwhile, fucking with you the whole time before the war. She'll make you a good wife, Lena. She knows all the tricks.
Geismar gives her a look. Bernie, the military lawyer, strides through the administration building and into the reception of records division to where Geismar sits waiting.
Eddie's. Jake, come on in my office. It takes two MPs to invite a friend over. No wonder you don't get many dates.
You haven't been home the last couple of nights. How come?
Keeping tabs on me, Bernie?
Those are classified.
I can keep a secret.
What the hell happened between you and Sikorsky?
Who's asking, you or Mueller?
I was stupid. Mueller thought I should arrest you.
Like you just did.
What happened to your ear?
Sikorsky says it's safer for me on the Russian side than on ours. I'm starting to think he's right.
Oh, yeah? What else did Sikorsky say?
Come on, Bernie. I show up in Berlin and the driver assigned to me is running around with my old girlfriend. That's a coincidence.
I knew it was a mistake to try to help you.
You put me in a car with Tully because you want Emil Brandt. Why?
My apologies, Jake, but I'm spending my days trying to find Adolf Eichmann, not filling out trip tickets. Why don't you get some sleep? You look like shit. Thanks for coming in.
Geismar walks into another office.
Hiya.
Can I help you, sir?
I need a trip ticket.
That's Form 48.
Thank you. Now, if I wanted to request a specific driver...
That's the same form, just fill in the name.
It's a fella I used a few days ago. Could you pull that trip ticket?
What's your name, sir?
Geismar. G-E-I-S.
The insolent filing clerk rolls his chair back from the cabinet and presents Geismar with the form.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Geismar scans the form, noting that the request was lodged by Lieutenant Hasso Schaefer of the Office of the Military Governor. Geismar stands in the street, looking across to where the bull-necked soldier is jumping a food queue. Geismar follows Schaefer at a distance. Schaefer enters a building, carrying his groceries. Geismar cautiously climbs the stairs.
Ich bin's, Roman Schaefer.
Geismar peers around a corner as Schaefer knocks at a door. A man appears and swaps the parcel Schaefer holds for a remarkably similar-looking one. As Schaefer heads back off down the stairs, Geisler comes down from the floor above and heads towards the apartment door.
Ich bin wieder, Leutnant Schaefer. Ich habe was vergessen.
A timid-looking man in a vest answers the door.
Kennen Sie Emil Brandt? Emil Brandt.
Do you know Emil Brandt? I knew him from Dora. Who is Dora? Why are they looking for Emil Brandt? Another man appears and pulls a gun. Geismar knocks him down with a chair and runs off. He dashes down the stairs. Back out in the wrecked street, he walks away, looking repeatedly over his shoulder. In an opulent reception room, smoke coils upwards towards a crystal chandelier. Champagne sits on ice on a table in the middle of a throng of people. Geismar weaves among the crowd, finally homing in on General Müller.
Champagne from the cellar of Admiral Dönitz. Care for some?
Well, I wouldn't want it to go to waste.
Size of the bubbles. Smaller the better. That's the key to champagne. This time last year, I was in Anzio, up to my balls in mud.
6 months ago, I was freezing my ass off in the Ardennes. The good old days. You could tell who the bad guy was by who was shooting at you.
Something on your mind?
You're hiding someone in a safe house in Kreuzberg. Who is it?
Lieutenant Schaefer should be more careful about who follows him.
I wouldn't blame Schaefer. His name was on the trip ticket.
It could be I'm just a very attentive host.
Either that or you thought I could lead you to Emil Brandt.
The general gives him a long look and then gestures for him to follow. Sikorsky watches them as they pass. Bernie and Congressman Breimer do likewise. Schaefer turns and watches as the general leads Geismar away from the reception and down a corridor to an office.
What do you think this peace conference is really about? Who gets Poland? The future. That's why everyone's come to Potsdam. What do the next 100 years look like? All those V-2 rockets that hit London during the war. Well, you were there. If it lasted another year, that would have been New York. Chicago.
What's this got to do with the peace conference?
I thought you might have recognized him. Our friend in the safe house is Franz Bettmann.
Geismar looks up sharply in response to this name.
The Russians get Poland and we get the brains.
In a perfect world, doesn't a man like Franz Bettmann wind up building rockets for our side?
But it's not a perfect world.
It doesn't surprise you that there are those who don't wish America well, does it?
And Emil Brandt?
Brandt was Bettman's secretary, like a son to him. Bettman wants to bring him along to America.
Awfully sentimental. 100,000 marks for somebody's secretary?
All of them. As many as we could track down. Split level with a Ford in the garage. Kids in the backyard playing in the sprinklers. Strange if you wanted anything different. Wives, too. I wouldn't put too much stock in that SS style. When I was at West Point, we put a uniform on a mule.
The general complacently sips his champagne. Geismar stands outside looking towards the riverbank, where a young boy in lederhosen sails his toy boat on the river. He addresses the boy in German.
Yes, for the Krieg zu Ende ist.
Now that the war is over, you can sail boats all summer. Until curfew. What do you do with the boats? You go and find them? On my bicycle. How far do they go? Far. You don't lose them? There's a place where the river eddies in Potsdam. Geismar stands looking pensive. Lena stands looking at herself in a mirror. Hearing the door, she turns sharply.
Look at these sleeves and all this ruching. Nobody wears anything like this anymore.
I thought we weren't going to reminisce anymore. Your rules. Not that we'd have time for it.
Why? What's going on?
Why didn't you tell me Emil was with the Rocky program?
I didn't think it mattered.
He worked directly under Franz Bettmann and you didn't think it mattered?
Who told you about Bettmann?
Muller.
They were graduated from the same polytechnic. That's why Bettmann hired him. Why did you talk to Muller?
He has Bettmann holed up in a safe house on his way to America to make rockets. That's why they're looking for Emil. They're all going, including the wives. Why didn't you tell me, Lena?
You know what Bettmann did.
Everybody knows who he is. He was famous before the war. Now you can either tell me or you can tell Bernie. He'll be here in 2 minutes.
No.
What was Tully selling that was worth so much money? Was it some sort of rocket secret?
No.
Lena.
How the rockets were built.
That was in this box, how they were built? Lena, please.
A factory inside a mountain. Tunnels where the American bombs couldn't reach. What were once sulfur mines. Someone had to take them out. Slave labor, prisoners, detainees. That was how they built the rockets. Emil was asked to calculate how much to feed them to keep them alive just 3 months until the tunnels were completed. It's here, in these notebooks. 800 calories a day. After that, let them die and bring in new workers. The correct answer, it turned out, was more efficient. They called it Dora. Camp Dora. 30,000 died in that camp. Bettmann ran it. Every detail. He hanged people from a crane right outside his office window.
Geismar looks up suddenly and crosses to the window. Two or three floors below, a car pulls up in the street. One man in uniform and another in civilian clothes get out, look up towards the window and then head inside.
Take the back stairs.
Find Danny, tell him we have to move again.
Lena? Make sure he knows where I can find you.
Lena hesitates in the doorway and then comes back to Geismar to hand him the box of notes. She exits in a dramatic sweep.
She's playing you, Jake. You have no idea what you're dealing with.
Muller paid Tully 100,000 marks for Emil Brandt because he worked for the rocket program. One big happy family. They're all coming over to our side now. Muller's hiding Franz Bettmann in a safe house.
Of course he's hiding him. The Russians want those guys worse than we do. They're kidnapping them off the streets.
He's not hiding them from the Russians, you dumb fucking cheesehead. He's hiding them from you. They built the rockets in concentration camps. Slave labor. Bettmann ran it.
I don't want to call your girlfriend a liar. Let's just say I've met 12 people who swear on their mother they can deliver me Adolf Hitler if I'll cut them a deal.
Her husband was Bettman's secretary. I've seen the notebooks.
Be honest with yourself for a change, Jake. Has anything good happened since you came back?
Bernie leaves. His German footpad, Gunther, throws Geismar an ironic salute and exits, leaving Geismar standing looking grimly perplexed. In the bustling wreckage of a Berlin street, Lena mounts her bicycle and cycles away, oblivious to the appreciative whistles of a group of American soldiers. Geismar emerges from a ruined archway and observes her going. Lena pushes her bike down an alleyway and parks it against the frontage of the shop into which earlier on Tully's disabled contact had disappeared. As Lena goes in through the door, Geismar appears at the entrance to the alleyway. He stares through the bow window of the shop front to where Lena stands at the counter getting something out of her bag. His eyes narrow. A short time later, Lena emerges from the shop and heads off with her bicycle. not noticing Geismar, who has secreted himself in an archway. Once Lena is out of the way, he emerges and heads into the shop. Placing his officer's cap onto the counter, he looks down towards where the man on the little wheeled cart is busy sorting small packages into a bank of mahogany pigeonholes.
Can I help you? A watch, perhaps?
No, thanks.
How about a cigarette case?
What happened to you?
An experiment to see if you can transplant a bone from one man into another. It turns out you can't.
Always something worse.
Yeah, you can get such toys anywhere. I have plenty of those. Russians trade them for Lugas.
No, thanks.
How about a camera? Holoflex. The old ones used to turn the image upside down in the viewfinder. A little mirror sets it right.
To set things right. Thing to wish for.
The woman who was just in here, what did she want?
Nichts. Nothing. She bought nothing.
I know her, Lena Brandt. I know she was here for a reason. Why?
Papers. She wanted papers to get out of Germany. A Persilschein, like the soap, that's what they call it. To wash the sins away.
Papers for who?
For herself.
What did she do that she has to wash away?
Better to ask why I would help her. Me, with what I survived.
I want to know.
The man behind the counter reaches up, but rather than taking the banknotes Geismar has slapped onto the counter, pushes them back towards him as he holds his look.
At the little White House in Potsdam, Generalissimo Stalin of Russia is one of the first to welcome the president, as the meeting is recorded by Signal Corps and newsreel cameras. Next to join the group is Prime Minister Churchill, who meets an old conference friend. The big three meetings are held in Kaiser Wilhelm's former palace, and President Truman is selected as chairman of the conference. Here, the fate of Germany and the end of Japanese aggression will be settled. Under the flag that flew over the White House when we declared war on the Axis, the president states our aims.
We're here today to raise the flag of victory over the capital of our greatest adversary. Let's not forget that we are fighting for peace and for the welfare of mankind. There's not one piece of territory or one thing of a monetary nature that we want out of this war. We want peace and prosperity for the world as a whole. If we can put this tremendous machine of ours, which has made this victory...
Geismar has slipped past the staff gathered around their radio and into the phalanx of library shelves at the American Administration Records Office. He searches the bees and finally locates a large file marked Brandt, Lena, January 43. He hesitates a moment and then pulls out the file. A sheet inside is inscribed Headquarters of the Military Governor, Berlin. Sent to Overcast, case number C35854, 3rd of July, 1945. Beyond this cover sheet, there is nothing. Geismar appears slightly baffled. He carefully closes the file and slides it back into place. In the bar, Geismar talks to the Scotsman.
They have a file on her. I thought Bernie's golem broke into her place looking for a meal, but it was Lena that they were looking for. That's why she had to get out of Berlin, something she did during the war. And Tully wasn't killed in Potsdam. He was killed at Mueller's. The body floated with the current. It means it didn't have to be someone with access to the peace conference. The Russian gun, you could pick up at a pawn shop. It could have been anyone.
Always something was.
Did she ask you?
What?
To get her out of Berlin.
She asked Tully. You want my advice? You forget all this. You'll only get hurt here. Or hurt someone.
Where is she, Danny?
Jake.
Where is she, Danny?
Jake.
Nighttime. A small open-topped car pulls up outside the building containing the flat shared by Lena and Hannah-Laura. Geismar gets out. The car pulls away again. He enters the building, climbing the stairs, he stops, seeing Lena coming down.
Where are you going?
I have someone to meet.
Who?
Stop following me.
What about the curfew?
Life is inconvenient sometimes like that.
It's not safe.
And always it seems not safe.
Who?
Someone who could get me out of Berlin.
I'll go with you.
No.
Tully tried to get you out of Berlin and you wound up dead.
Someone is waiting for me.
Why is it so important for you to get out?
Please.
What are you running away from?
Geismar stops dead, looking down at the pistol Lena now holds to his midriff. He looks back at her in disbelief.
You should never have come back to Berlin.
She gives him a grave parting look and heads away down the stairs, leaving him standing framed by an enormous jagged circular shell hole in the rear wall of the building.
Why didn't Jake follow me? Why didn't he try? He was scared. Scared I'd really do it. That I'd shoot him. Just like Tully. All these men, they want you to cry in their arms. I had no more tears. I knew what I had become. I had to kill Tully. He was getting too close to the truth, which was that the only way out of Berlin for me was to do one thing good, one thing noble. Otherwise, Berlin would just follow me. A wife should help her husband. Isn't that noble? Isn't that good?
Lena descends into the ruined subway. A man lies sleeping.
Emil.
The man stirs and looks up. Lena gazes at him with a loving smile. He pulls on a pair of wire-rimmed glasses and smiles back at her. The couple sit, unwrapping small newspaper packages of food. Does Geismar know I'm alive? No. Are you sure? Yes. How can you be? You need to eat something. I'm losing my mind, breathing the same air every day. I need to take a walk. No, absolutely not. Half an hour on the Friedrichstrasse, they can't watch every moment. The Americans have Bettmann. Emil stops and looks away as he absorbs this. The lies he'll tell. It's absurd anyone could believe him. I'm Franz Bettmann, a world-famous man of science. Those terrible things that happened. It was the SS. I knew nothing. People are thinking of themselves. Why shouldn't you? The world must know the truth. What really happened? That's the only way out for us. We must answer for what we did. Every one of us. I promised I would help you. And I will. For the future. For Germany. Lena smiles ruefully. Be patient. I'm close. She squeezes his hand and then gets up to leave. How do you know you can trust Geismar? He could get in the middle and ruin everything like Tully. Then he'll end up like Tully. She throws him a final look and then turns to pick her way back through the derelict flooded tunnel. Back in the open, she pushes her bike past a vast poster of Stalin. Knots of Russian troops lounging by a truck, a jeep and a tank get frisky as she passes them serenely by. Lena sits on a bench by the river. Next to her sits Bernie, who is clearly uncomfortable and seems not to know how to begin.
I'll be candid. I think I'm the last person you'd want to contact.
Sometimes people surprise you.
Then your husband is alive? We're going to have to decide to trust each other, Mrs. Brandt. To ask to meet me here in the Russian sector is not a good start.
I'm frightened. It's not so difficult to understand.
When our GIs liberated Camp Dora, they found bodies stacked up in a room. Stopped counting at 1,000. That was the first thing they found. There's nothing, nothing to link Batman to any of it. Not one sheet of paper, not one witness. Your husband sat in on every single meeting and took notes. If he were alive, it would be extremely significant.
Yes, he's alive. He's a good German. He wants to tell the truth about Camp Dora.
What is it you want, Mrs. Brandt?
I want to get out of Berlin without my husband.
Does he know that?
No.
If I let you go, I'm part of the same hypocrisy as Mueller.
But you'll do it.
Bring him in. Bring your husband in. We'll talk about it. Why'd you leave the money on him? Tully, did you panic?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Lena packs her things.
You sure you wouldn't be better off staying put?
I'm nervous someone followed me here. I'm close, Danny, really close to getting out. That's when people get careless.
Because you can trust Jake if that's who you're worried about.
Have you got somewhere you can put me?
I've got a kino I bought in the French sector. You know how they are about cinema. Matinee only until the curfew's lifted, but it still turns a dollar. After that, I'm fresh out of places to park you.
She kisses his cheek.
I'm going to need some money when I get to London. You got a John for me? A rich one?
I've got a bloke in the club who'll give you 1,000 marks. Thinking about it, when I met you, you'd never go for a can of tuna.
Lena, alone now, enters the hallway of a lavish and well-maintained building. She climbs the broad sweep of the staircase. She lets herself into a spacious apartment. She walks further in, then stops as she spots across the room a half-open door.
Hello?
She peers in through the half-open door and then turns away. She stands in front of a cheval mirror and slips off her coat. Out from the adjoining room steps Geismar. Lena turns, amazed.
Don't let me interrupt you. $1,000. That's the deal, isn't it?
Lena gives a smile of ironic amusement.
You want it straight or something special?
What's special?
Whatever you want.
How did Tully like it?
Rough. You're going to take off your clothes?
You do it.
She draws close to him, still half smiling and holding eye contact. She begins to loosen his collar. She drops her gaze. He seems almost on the point of kissing her. Her fingers seem to lose their deftness and the sexual charge between them turns to hopelessness.
Forget it. You keep the money.
I won't.
I would have gotten you out. I still would.
You can never really get out of Berlin.
She smiles. He touches her cheek. Hesitant at first, they finally kiss. Nighttime. Lena, clutching a cardboard box, approaches the frontage of a cinema standing among the ruins. She enters. At the top of the stairs into the auditorium, she pauses momentarily and then carries on briskly upwards towards the projection room. The shadow of a figure passes across the projection room window. Lena cuts the string around the cardboard box. There's a parade tomorrow, from the Brandenburg Gate all the way down the Wilhelmstrasse. The checkpoints along the parade route will all be open. You can walk straight through the Russian sector to Kreuzberg. That's where he's meeting us. In the box is a uniform. Emil paces. Why does it have to be so complicated? There is no direct route to the American sector from here. It's either this or go through the British checkpoints. They'd deliver you straight to Müller. Look how many times I've moved, and they've always found me. What does that tell you?
Was meinst du, Paul, was das bedeutet?
Und Hauptmann Teitel persönlich.
Will Captain Teitel himself will meet us in Kreuzberg? Yes. She holds up the uniform. I had to guess your size. You've lost so much weight. He takes her hands. It was a good thing, what you did. To help me hide, maybe to get caught yourself. Not everyone would have. She places her forehead against his. She looks up on hearing the sound from below in the auditorium. Going to the window, she looks down. A coil of cigarette smoke rises from the stairway below. Lena descends into the auditorium. Arriving at the stairway, she looks down to see the final quarter inch of a cigarette butt smouldering on the carpet. A terrible realization seems to dawn on her. Along a vast boulevard move serried ranks of soldiers of various nationalities. A military band plays. Tanks roll past. Press corps cameras record the event. General Sikorsky stands watching the parade. He turns to look back to where Müller stands flanked by Breimer and Bernie. Civilians congregate in a side street to watch the parade. Out from a doorway step Lena and Emil, who is now dressed in the military uniform. She takes his arm as they walk away from the parade. They pass a black car. At the wheel sits Gunther, observing them. The couple arrive at the doorway of Bettmann's safe house. They enter cautiously, and then Lena leads the way up the rubble-strewn staircase. She moves along a corridor to the door at the end. they let themselves into the apparently deserted flat. Lena turns in surprise as Geismar emerges from the back. What's he doing here?
I followed you. It's a good thing, too. Go down to the zoo station, find Danny, and wait there until I can get enough money to get both of you out.
We can't trust him.
Why should I trust you, pal? I'm the one sticking my neck out.
We're supposed to meet Hauptmann Teitel here. He's not the Hauptmann Teitel.
We have to draw you a picture. Somebody got to him.
But
even Bernie they could get to. What does that tell you?
As Emil says shh, they all fall silent. Up the staircase walks Lieutenant Schaefer.
You stand over there like you're waiting. You answer the door.
Lena approaches the door and opens it with a trembling hand.
Mrs. Brand. This must be the thing.
Geismar jumps Schaefer and wrestles him to the floor.
Go!
Schaefer pistol whips Geismar and then aims at the fleeing Lena and Emil. Lena falls. Emil clutches Lena and turns in fear towards Schaefer. Lena tells Emil to go. Emil, running down the stairs, seems to be wounded and falls. Lena grabs at Schaefer's legs as he passes. Schaefer, his face ugly with rage, stops, aiming the gun at Lena. Unjamming the gun, Schaefer then spots Geismar coming after him and shoots at him instead. Schaefer descends to where Emil lies wounded. Geismar tends to Lena. Emil's eyes widen in fear.
Help him.
Schaefer aims point blank at Emil. Again, the gun jams. Geismar leaps over the banister onto Schaefer's shoulders. He picks up a brick from the rubble and smashes it down on the lieutenant's head. He turns to Emil.
Go.
Emil limps out onto the street. Geismar turns as Lena descends the stairs, apparently wounded in the abdomen. Emil brushes dust from the uniform he is wearing and struggles purposefully away. A large black car is parked in the ruined square outside. As Emil attempts to merge with the crowds watching the parade, Gunther appears, snapping the brim of his hat as he prepares to give chase. Geismar supports the wounded Lena. Gunther pushes through the crowds in pursuit of Emil. Emil, now aware of Gunther, barges on through the dense scrum of onlookers. Geismar and Lena now reach the throng of people and push their way through. Gunther catches up with Emil and clamps a hand over his mouth as he forces him to the ground. Geismar and Lena push their way onwards. They eventually come to where Emil's prone body lies in a pool of blood. Geismar kneels down by Emil, who lies there lifeless, a trickle of blood issuing from his mouth. A look of profound sadness passes across Lena's face, and then she appears to lose consciousness, toppling onto Emil's body. Geismar puts a hand to her neck as if feeling for a pulse. The crowd continue to clap and wave at the passing bands, except for the circle of people immediately around the tragic scene. Blackness. In a tiled hospital ward, Lena lies groggily in bed. An infusion bottle is suspended above her.
How's your shoulder?
Brimer stands by Lena's bed.
Nurses are very kind.
We were told that if we found you, your husband would follow, that he was devoted to you. Now I understand why. You're a lovely woman. Remind me of the gals back home.
He comes to sit on the bed and places his hand familiarly by her legs.
Schenectady. You like it there? Lots of good German folk. The Sauerfleisch would make you forget Berlin.
Forgetting would be better than the Sauerfleisch.
Well, forgetting's a two-way street. There are things you want to forget and things we want to forget. Where are your husband's documents, Mrs. Brown? We can't seem to find them.
Oh, they're not with my other things.
You know they're not.
I don't know. I can't remember anything. The medicine they've given me, it's making me feel all dizzy.
Brimer smiles knowingly and pats her hand.
Most important thing right now is for you to get well. Brand.
Brimer puts his hat on and walks out of the ward into the corridor. Geismar approaches from the other direction.
What the hell are you doing here?
Why, Mr. Geismar, it's after visiting hours, but I guess some people just can't follow the rules.
Leave her alone. I mean it.
I came here to make sure she makes the right decision.
You really want to push me? I wouldn't.
You don't have those documents, do you, Jake? You've seen what months of bombing can do to a city. Imagine one bomb could do the same thing. One bomb. Stick it on the end of a rocket, press a button here, it goes off over there, anywhere, halfway around the world. That's the future. The future of mankind's in our hands. It's our destiny. Hell, don't you read the papers?
Brimer thrusts a paper at Geismar and walks away. Geismar looks at it to find it is a copy of the Stars and Stripes, bearing a headline, "Atomic Bomb Leaves Countless Thousands Dead." Towards the glass door marked Records Division, Geismar strides. Within, seated at a desk, is Bernie.
How'd you get in here?
Who got to you? Was it Mueller?
Do I need to call an MP?
Not just yet. What's Overcast?
Who told you about Overcast?
Is it a code name? What's it got to do with Lena? Come on, Bernie. Trot out one of your atrocity stories to get me off your back.
I had nothing to do with what happened to Emil Brandt.
Bullshit, Bernie. You're the only one that knew about me and Lena.
So what? They got to me, all right? At least I got something for it. I get to hang a half dozen Nazis they wanted to just send to jail. Not like your girlfriend, though. She got everything she wanted, didn't she? She's good at that.
But you can tell your boy Gunther that he left one big swinging loose end. Lena doesn't have Emil's documents. I do.
Don't do it, Jake.
I'll be sure to call you later for your quote.
You never saw Lena's file, did you? Yeah. You get me those documents or I'll put her in jail for the rest of her life. I have everything I need and then some. Don't think I won't do it.
Geismar stops and then retraces his steps.
If I give you those documents and she leaves with me,
Brimer's already taken care of that.
Not with Bettman, with me. Any place she wants to go, any place I want to take her.
You've been wrong every step of the way, Jake. Why stop now?
What's in her file, Bernie?
Why don't you ask her?
Geismar stares hard at Bernie. A uniformed soldier stamps a piece of paper and hands it over to Lena. Geismar takes her arm and, opening an umbrella, walks her out onto the apron of the airstrip. A silver propeller plane waits on the runway.
You have your papers?
They won't stop me. I'm with you.
Where are they?
They're in my purse. There's something wrong. Jake.
Why was it so important to get Emil out of Berlin? And why does Bernie have a file on you?
He had a file on everyone, I told you. I was the wife of an SS man.
Hitler put the rocket program under the SS 2 years ago. That's what you told me. That as the wife of an SS man, you were exempt.
That's true. I told you the truth.
How many Jews were still in Germany in 1943? By the time Emil was in the position to help you, you should have already been deported or dead.
There were not so many. You're right. So when they caught me, I turned that to my advantage. I used the skills you taught me when I worked for you, for the newspaper. Watch, observe. The stupid risks they would take. Lunch at Ashigan's, just to remind themselves they were still human. I found 12. I turned 12 people over to the Gestapo. That's how I survived. It was all to survive. Everything.
Geismar drops his gaze, as if disappointed beyond words.
Now you know. The last piece in your puzzle.
She puts a hand to his chest. He looks up at her. She leans in and kisses him gently on the cheek. She turns sadly and walks off towards the waiting plane. Geismar remains standing in the downpour, watching her go. Reaching the top of the short flight of steps to the plane, she turns and looks back at him before disappearing inside the cabin. The engines fire up. Geismar hangs his head and then turns and slowly walks back across the airstrip. The end.